The speaker we have tonight for our pitch meeting may or may not need introduction. He's spoken here, I think it was about 2 years ago, for our beginner series, and he's a dynamic fellow in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll give you Jay.
My name is Jay, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Truly blessed and honored to be here. I want to thank Phil for coming down to ask me. And I'm going to share, you know, a message of hope. I have a good time when I'm up here a lot of the times, when I'm feeling good. You know, I don't write anything down. It doesn't come from anything that I've said the last time or whatever it is. It is what it is. And, you know, I believe that's all according to where I am in my program and what I'm doing for my spirit in that particular day or that particular week or what, you know, what's going on in my life. So it's good for everybody. That's a good day. I'm feeling very well. Just out of the hospital hours ago. Flown in to share at this wonderful place that I've been to before. Not enough. I've had some trials and tribulations with my industry, and jobs have been flip-flopping around, and things have been a little bit hectic the past year and a half. The mortgage industry is a little bit messy at the moment. But I've landed on my feet with God's help, you know, and I haven't done too much worrying about that stuff, and whatever it is, and that's just, you know, just a simple saying like that might not seem a lot to somebody else here, but to me, it's astronomically beautiful. Whatever it is, there's nothing I can do about what the outcome of that stuff is going to be, and I use that on a daily basis to go through my life, and it's been a real blessing. Even with the trials and tribulations of the last year and a half, you know, I take a look at things and I say, oh, well, you're working. Many, many, many people in the world are not. So don't cry about having to, you know, switch places or do this or do that. You know, put in some effort and the outcome's out of your hands. I mean, isn't that pretty simple? The problem is that, you know, sometimes me and a lot of us are guilty of not doing that. You know, we want to do it. You know, we're going to make this happen, we're going to make that happen, and unfortunately, I'll use that before I go into a little bit of my story with my recent hospital stay, which was, of course, of my own making, like mostly a lot of other things are. I've had a bout with diverticulitis in the past. If everybody knows what diverticulitis is, it's not a pleasant experience. There is quite a bit of abdominal pain and quite a bit of other stuff that goes along with it. You know, since this is being taped, I'll refrain from any of that stuff, but, you know, it's not pleasant. But why does this come about with me, personally? And all this I'm sharing tonight is going to be my experience, just, you know, whatever it is, and with that too. I've come a long way, and it's nice to see some people that I know for a long, long time here that I don't get to see too often, so it's great to see everybody. But, you know, with my current set of circumstances that just happened is, you know, I'm 50 years old, I'm going to be 50, God willing, and 10 years ago I had a bout with this. I was in the hospital for 7 days. I was told not to do this, this, and that. Because this is a reoccurring condition. Just because we got rid of it this time doesn't mean it won't come back. So I said, okay, I'll do that. And I didn't do that. So the program runs deep. It runs deep, you know, I'm powerless against listening. You know, if a doctor who spent many hours of research to tell you what to do, you don't listen to him, and you want to go and eat a cheeseburger or french fries, then this is for me. You know, this is no offense to anybody else. If you can eat a cheeseburger, God bless you, you know, nuts and corn and seeds and all that other stuff, you know, God bless you. I'm not telling you not to do that, but for me personally, they told me don't do that. And I did it. And I've been doing it quite a bit the past, I would say, you know, 6 months. As you can see by my appearance, I am at no appetite loss. And I say this jokingly because I really do love myself. It's just, you know, I thought, you know, like we always think, and I really, you know, emotionally can attribute this to using or drinking. I attribute the same, you know, some time passes, and you think without some type, you know, I can have one. And then all of a sudden, one drink leads to another and another, and you're in the hospital. Or you're even worse, God forbid. So the same thing has happened with my food intake. So, you know, it wasn't a pleasant experience. I'm happy to be out. Because, you know, the hospital is the hospital. I mean, does anybody like to be in the hospital? Raise your hand. So, I mean, there is other alternatives to the hospital that are not as good, but the hospital is not something that, you know, I want to go to, and it's very hard to get me there. As most of us know, you know, I was really in a lot of pain. I went there and they told me that I had a little abscess on my intestine this time. So it, you know, always gets worse, never gets better. So now that's applying to my diverticulitis. I never had an abscess before. Now I have an abscess. Next time it'll be snip, snip, and, you know, maybe not so fortunate. So, again, I've embarked on this, I know better, self-knowledge will avail me everything, and I won't do this anymore. And, I hope that God will help me with it. See, I didn't ask God for enough help. With my food. And, you know, I quit smoking 3 years ago, and I'm doing well in recovery, and, you know, I mean, you know, I quit smoking 3 years ago, and I don't feel, you know, I'm out of shape and all this type of stuff, and I want God to help me with that, and I know He can. So what's my point? You know, I've got to ask for it. Got to be willing to look for it. You know, and I know there's things that I can do in this program, this beautiful, beautiful fellowship that has allowed me to have these tools to use in all aspects of our life. I mean, it says that in the book. You know, all my problems. Not only, you know, it's far past the alcohol for me. Now it's about all my problems, and I'm going to apply it. I'm going to hold that full W right to that. It says it in the book. If it says it in the book, it must be true. If I apply it. So, they let me out of the helicopter, and here I am to meet Phil at Starbucks and have coffee. So if anything should happen during this, little talk, it's not my fault. I'm doing what I can. But I was excited to come. I know what this group does for people. I mean, I know, I should say, you know, what the fellowship and the to use the proper wording, I guess, is the structure of this group and what message they're trying to pass. And you know, I'm blessed to have been passed that message myself after many years of not getting that message. And, you know, of course, you know, I always thought if I sit up front, drink coffee, and have willpower, then I'm going to be okay. You know, just go to enough meetings and doing all that and do service and do all that, which is good stuff. I'm not saying it's bad stuff. But, you know, I wasn't given the proper, you know, I feel I was given beat recovery. I'm going to blame them. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to blame everybody else for my trials and tribulations. But it might have been because I wasn't listening. So I also say to a newcomer or somebody that's struggling in recovery, because we can struggle in sobriety, this is a spiritual program of action that has ups and downs. And in my experience, again, and, you know, are you listening? Are you taking what's being told to you from people who have experience with it? And if you're suffering, that's your choice. Because I know if you come here, you're getting the message. So there's no reason for it. If you want to apply it. And that's where my passion lies, you know, for somebody who's suffering. It's really bad to suffer in full-blown alcoholism, but it's even worse to suffer in sobriety. I mean, at least when you're suffering in alcoholism, you don't even know it. You're not aware of it, you know. You know, I'm not suffering. Oh, you're not? Okay. Well, let's go over that. Where's your car? I don't know. What time did you go? I don't know. The biggest thing with an alcoholic, you know, for me, in my experience, is I don't know. Didn't you go to work today? No. Or is it today Sunday, or is it Monday, you know, the whole thing gets gobbled up. So, you know, you can't really understand the suffering too much until you do realize that, you know, eventually, of course, we all understand that this ain't right. How could this be right? The bartender's driving my car. I mean, what did I do? Did I rent it? Did I sell it? You know, where's my TV? It's not here anymore. Did it walk out by itself? I mean, you know, then we, you know, if you have a half a brain in your head, you'll understand that suffering. But, you know, I think an active addiction, it doesn't hurt as bad. Because you're, for me anyway, the next one takes it away. For me. As long as I don't have to think and see everything gone or whatever it is, then I'll just continue on, you know, drunk and high and, you know, miserable or not. But my point to it is, you know, when you come into the fellowship and you walk through and somebody, you know, lends out a hand to help you and you decide you want to help yourself, because it's very simple. As long as you're willing, then somebody else will be willing. I think the key to it all is the willingness to come in here. And if you've made that decision to come in here, then it's a shame to be miserable. Because it doesn't have to be that way. You know, there's a way to get to this place of what I call peace and neutrality and no obsession of the mind. And I tell you, you know, I wouldn't trade any money or job or any circumstance of my life for that. I don't know the last time I thought anything about drinking. Or other substances. Thank God it's not video recording. It's only audio. But, you know, You know, there's other things in my life that have brought me to hell. And all of us sitting here will understand our own individual stories. You know, there's nothing but miracles sitting in this room. And, you know, being brought to a place of peace is, you know, when somebody would tell a newcomer that, yeah, they'd say, yeah, right, you know. Sure. Because I said that. When I first came in, 1985, which is a lot of years ago, you know, I came in because, you know, everybody was telling me to come in. My job and my family and all these type of people were telling me, you know, you got a problem. I said, I do. What happened? They said, well, where's the jewelry that you had on yesterday? And that's the God's honest truth. From the very first time, I sold things. I mean, I don't understand, you know, what the book calls, you know. I call it Fugazi. Other people call it teetotalers or sippers or all this type of stuff. I just call it, you know. I mean, you know. You know, I can't understand it because it's not me. Other people can understand it because they're not me. I'm not them, they're not me. And that's the whole thing why we're here. It's, you know, it's a very simple thing that, you know, people make complicated. I'm not you, you're not me, that's why you can do that, and I can't. Why can't you have a drink? Well, you know, I don't know, why can't you do something else? You know, I can't explain, you know, how many times I've tried to be them. How many countless times and times and times and times, and all my experience always showed that I'm never going to be that, but still, and that's the true meaning of insanity. I've learned this over all the years that I've been in this fellowship. I mean, look, you know, I'm guilty of it. I'm not standing here telling me you I'm not. I wasn't. It's insane for me to think those thoughts. And that's what this program for me is all about, to have a spiritual experience and a higher power of my understanding, along with many, many other things that this beautiful step work does for you, is to rid your mind of those thoughts. Because you can't rid them of their thoughts yourself. And that's the big downfall of many people. They think that, you know what, last time I did that, so I know better, I won't do it this time. This time I know better. And the book also quotes, and I don't sit around quoting pages. You know, I know them and all, but I'm not, you know. I don't, you know, I have an experience with my book. Every time I'm in it, and I'm in it quite often, because I have an experience with it, and I've been humbled by it. And I've been humbled by ego, and I've been humbled by many different things in my time in the fellowship. But I will tell you that it says, self-knowledge avails me nothing. I can know all I want that I can't have a drink, and I drink anyway. And it's very simple then. You say that to a newcomer. Did you know you weren't supposed to drink? Yes. Why'd you drink? I don't know. I drank because of my job. I drank because of this. I drank because of that. You know, this happened, that happened. And I'm not making light of circumstances in people's lives. But it's been smacked home to me that means nothing. That has no bearing on me picking up a drink. Because I've drank when I had the greatest job in the world, and I've drank when I didn't have any job. I've drank when things were great at home. I've drank when I've been married. And I love my wife. Let me make sure I say that. Car or no car, money or no money, life or no life, good or bad or indifferent. You know, the first thing, one of the first things that I learned when I came in, you know, know, the last times around was all that stuff means nothing. The obsession of the mind kicks in, you drink, sets off the allergy of the body, which makes you unable to stop. And I think that's a very simple concept that I grasped. And when somebody sat me in their house, and I'm going to get into that a little bit, because that person has passed away a long time ago, but very, very true to me, was very was very good to me, and told me my truth. And that was in 2000, when I first met this person, it was 2003. And I went into this person's house, just to give you a short story on it, I was 4 days sober, coming off a terrible, terrible relapse. I had no experience with the book at all. I was sober for the first time in my life in 2002. I mean, let me just give backtrack a little bit. When I first came into the fellowship, just to tell you a little bit about me, I'm not going to go into the whole drink a log and other logs because it's useless, right? That's not what's done for me. This is something that I want to help somebody with what's got me to where I am today, but I just want to give a little bit of, you know, my background is that I came in 85 with no intention of being sober. And I lied, and I did this, and I did that, all the way up. God kept me alive, for whatever reason, all the way up to 2002. In 2002, I finally said to myself, I'm dying. I can't do this anymore. I need to get help. So I went through the process. I went through a rehab, a detox, a sober house. I came out of the sober house. I was sober 10 months. And those 10 months that I was sober, which was the first 10 months of my life that I've ever been sober, because I never believed, this may help somebody, I never believed in my life that I can go one day without some type of a mind-altering substance. Now, one day, I can't enjoy TV. I can't enjoy sports. I can't enjoy work. I can't do work. I used to always think, I can't go to work. I won't function if I'm not drunk or other things. So that's all a lie. That's the mind telling you that you can't do that. All part of this unspiritual sickness, in my belief. So in 02 I came in and I went to 7 meetings a week. Just want to give you a, and God will help me, you know, not to, you know me, I'm a very nice guy. I don't throw my book on the floor no more. I used to throw my book on the floor, God bless anybody. However you want to do this, you do it. That's fine. You know, I know for me that it didn't work, and I'll tell you what didn't work. I went to 7 meetings every 7 meetings a week. I was picked up by a fellow alcoholic every day. I went to diners, I made coffee, I got a cell phone, in the first 7 months back in 03, from December 02 to June of 03, I was actually sober from October till June. I didn't step out of the, I didn't do one, you know, some guy took me into a meeting and started to read the book to me. God bless him. It was a very small meeting in Roosevelt. There's about 6 or 7 of us there. And he's reading the book to me. Nobody else was reading but him. And he's breaking it down, like we do. And my ignorance said to him, I know how to read. What is it with you? It's exactly what I said to him. I remember like it was yesterday. Nicest guy in the world. Nobody would ever yell at this guy. I won't mention his name, of course. But I love the guy till today, and he loves me. I have some contact with him, not a lot, but some. And he said to me, he started laughing. I said to him, what do you think, I'm stupid? I know how to read. And he goes, and he started laughing. So I, what are you laughing at? He said, just let me read you. Let me finish. I said, okay, go ahead. So we got in this car later, and he drove. And this is the guy that picked me up from the soul bound and took me home. And I'm telling him in the car on the way home, you know, you're an idiot. What is wrong with you? And I'm really counting these things like a real, you know what that I am. Arrogant, you know what. I'm very, very, you know. In those 7 months, in the middle of those 7 months. Because I like my meetings, see? I like to go to my meetings where I would raise my hand and share about my day. And tell everybody how great I'm doing. And recapture some things. And have a cell phone and something to eat. Well, it's hard not to get something to eat when you're in a sober house. But I didn't make one amend. I didn't pay back one person. I didn't do one fourth step. I didn't do anything of spiritual nature at all, as far as the book was concerned. I was doing some spiritual stuff by, you know, definition, but I didn't know it. I didn't know what I was doing that was spiritual when I did it. You know, for me, it's spiritual if you go to 7-Eleven and you don't steal. Yes? You walk into 7-Eleven and pay for what you bought. That's a switch. So I figured I was doing good. 7 months, look at me, you know, I'm doing great, you know. But I was not in the program of recovery as I know it to be today for me. I was not in the program. I was in the fellowship. And I was really mean to that person who picked me up and drove me home. And I've since, you know, he didn't care. You know, because he knows, you know, what the deal is. And today he's like, you know, a very good friend of mine. And, you know, and we joke about it all the time. Because look how far, you know, look who I am. I'm the guy who's getting yelled at now. So, you know, that experience did not end well. 10 months out of the sober house. One day, back to drinking. One day out. I told you, I'm not fugazi. And I didn't go back the next day. And I hear that all the time, you know. No offense to anybody, but, you know, when I start, I don't stop. I don't know what this is, you know. I started during the day, I went to sleep, I woke up. What? Went to sleep and woke up. And I went to work. Went to work. Wow. You are something else. You are better than me. Because I'm telling you right now, as I'm standing, I never went to work. Never one time did I ever go to work once I started using. It'd be pretty funny to go to work in the condition I was in, let me tell you. And at that time, I was working in the deli. You know, I probably wouldn't have any fingers. They might be on your sandwich. So those crunchies are not... So, you know, I don't go to work. I don't do any of that stuff. Once I start, I can't stop. And isn't that the simple definition of addiction? For me, that's what it is. If you can start and stop when you say so, and you do that consistently, and it's not affecting your life in a derogatory manner, ever, then you're not me. And there's a big distinction between the two of us. So when I go out with my friends, and I'll get back to, you know, the other thing in a minute. I didn't forget. Well, I go back to when I go out with my friends at work. I'm a loan officer in a bank, and everybody sits around. And this is what they do. They buy a bottle of wine. My boss is, you know, a big shot, you know. And he buys the wine, and here they pop it open, and they go like this. That's, they stir it. You understand? They smell it. They take with the taste. You know, I'll take this one or that one. And here am I saying to myself, I smack him on the back one time. I said, why don't you just drink it already? Because me, I don't care. I drink for the effect caused by the chemical, correct? It doesn't matter to me if it's Thunderbird. I mean, I guess most of you know what Thunderbird is. Or worse, soap. And here these tea toddlers, and they take a glass, and a half hour later, same glass still there. And they sipped a little bit, and when they leave, it's still there. And I'm going, what? And there, in a nutshell, is the distinction. How long would that last with you? How long? How long would that bottle last? And do you care if it's $500 a bottle? Does it really matter? So I have to always understand that you know, with my now program of recovery, and they say to me, why don't you just have a little? I'm not going to sit there on the table and out there and explain the whole thing to them. Why don't I have a little? So I very simply say to them, and many people can handle it any way they want, because, you know, I'm going to get into this too. You know, this is what recovery is. It's freedom. I don't have any chains on my legs or limits on my recovery. If somebody invites me out and everybody's drinking, as long as I'm in quite fit spiritual condition, I don't care what they do. See, do you get that? This is not a program of triggers or people, places, and things, as far as my experience is concerned. This is not people, places, and things and triggers. You may think it might be, but my experience is that it's not. My trigger is me. That's the only thing that can trigger me, is me. The other guy can't trigger me, unless I'm not fit spiritually. Then the thought will creep into my mind, $500 bottle of wine might taste good. Maybe I'll sip a little. That's what an untreated alcoholic, see, an untreated alcoholic may sit there and say that. I would still call that a person who has a sick mind. And it doesn't matter how many times before you've been beaten to a pulp. At this point in time, I would tell you to get on your knees immediately in the restaurant, or go help an old lady across the street, or go push a shopping cart at Western Beef, or Wallbound's, or someplace else. Go help another. We have explicit instructions in this fellowship, not, you know, anything else but that, if you want to get rid of the thought of using. Because if you're in that cha-cha land, then that's not good. And we all know what the drunk cha-cha is. Should I or shouldn't I? Walk past the bar? Should I go in? No, the Yankee game's on. I'll go in. Unspiritually fit, in a bar, now you're Jim. Now all of a sudden it's going to be all right to have a sandwich and put a little milk in your whiskey. And that's not going to have an effect on you. So this is insanity of untreated alcoholism. So when I speak of these things, when I speak of recovery, I speak from experience that today, this is where I'm at. Back then, 7 months in sobriety, when I did do 10 months and I started to drink again, it didn't turn out too well, of course, as we know. And I came back and I went into this gentleman's house, and I sat at a table with him, and there was many people today I call my brother, and I love very well, very, very much, and they sat me down and told me to shut up, sit down, you don't know anything, meeting makers don't make it, for the most part, you have to do certain things. So I said, and they read to me the prefaces in the foreword. We were reading that part. He was doing He was doing a big book series in his house. Instead of going to, you know, doing a big book meeting in an outside place, he was doing it in his house. And he read through the prefaces and the forwards, and he said, 75% of those who follow this program make it. And 2 out of 3 return after this, and I said, what? Well, I was always told that 1 out of 100. Or, you know, a very small percentage. And I questioned that. He goes, no, it's right here in the book. Here, take a look. I said, okay. And then he read on. And he said, as he was reading on, God bless. You know, I wasn't an easy guy to read the book to at the beginning. So don't think that, you know, I'm talking from any place else. If you're not easy right now to read the book to, then that's okay. I was the worst you could ever see, I believe. I mean, I was balking at it so bad that it wasn't even funny. And the guy picked up a bottle of liquor, and I don't know if he had it planned or not, but he picked up a bottle of liquor that was right next to him in his own house. He lived with a person who drank, and he had 2 drunks renting out upstairs. It's a true story. 2 drunks upstairs in the 2 rooms, drunk every single day. His person that he was living with, his partner, was drinking. Not an alcoholic, but one of them. Would drink a couple of drinks every day. And he was sober for 15 years. And I said to him, you know, you're so full of blankety blank, it's not even funny. You have all this going on and you don't drink? He goes, no, I don't even think about drinking. So this intrigued me. This made me wonder. To keep an open mind to listening to somebody who had that many years. And believe me, at that time I was questioning whether he was drinking 2 days a week. Because I was 4 days sober. So I want to smash a couple of misnomers while we're here. I didn't wait a year to start doing my steps. I was 4 days sober when I got into the book. Shaking and baking, a mess. I got into the work right away. 7 months later, I was sponsoring somebody. And he told me, he said, you know, this is about the obsession of the mind and the allergy of the body, and, you know, you can do anything another free person, and all these great things and all these promises that are, you know, I had to experience to believe. Nobody, I don't believe anybody can stand and tell you about it. You have to experience it. And the only way to do it is, for me, is to be willing and open-minded to doing something different than you've done in the past. If the way that you're doing it now isn't working, then maybe you want to just try a different way. And that's the gentlest way I can put it today. And if you don't, then don't. Stay miserable. It's fine. If that's what you want to do. But I'm telling you that there's a way out of that, no matter what your current circumstances are. Doesn't matter. My higher power has an answer for all my problems. If I utilize them, it works. If I don't, it's me, and it's in the hospital with cheeseburgers and all the others. So, you know, the great thought that we got that time, that was my first experience with the book and my first experience with people who are working what I call a solution-based message. Because it's great to stand up here and tell you that it's going to be okay. And hang on. And, you know, tomorrow is a better day. Every day, it's a successful day if you don't pick up or drink today. Now, I would have always thought that to be the truth. Today, I know it's a lie. I don't use my normal analogy, so I'll use a different one. What a successful day. You're working at a job, you stole from the register. You didn't drink. So you had a good day, no? You bought a new color TV. You haven't made one amend. You have a TV that works. Doesn't that rabbit ears with aluminum foil? It's a nice TV. But you ran out and bought another one, and, you know, buying all this luxury, you know, all this nice stuff that you really don't need. It's a nice thing to have if you can do it. I've been taught, and let me tell you this one, which many people don't like, I've been taught and I've been shown, it's stealing in recovery. Before you make any amends or cut the best deal you can to pay back what is not rightfully yours, and then go lavish yourself with other stuff, with the new suits and the fancy clothes and the... And if I'm hurting anybody's feelings, that's... You know, I don't mean to do that. That's just the way I feel. Well, maybe I mean to do that because... You might take a look at it, but... It's not for me to make you take a look at anything. I'm just saying that's what I've been told. And it doesn't feel right anymore. See, what was normally right before is no longer feels right. And it goes so deep as for me to say to you that when I'm wrong, I'll probably admit it so fast. I mean, and I'm wrong a lot, of course. But I work with earthlings. God forgive me. I work in an industry where nobody cares what I do. They don't care. They don't want to listen to me saying, I can't go, you know, I can't have a drink. There's constantly going to be temptations. There's constantly going to be this or that. It's not for me because the dubious luxury of resentment and guilt and shame and no amends and all that, that's for them, not for me. I gotta stop being them in many different aspects of my life. For me, it's not only not drinking, it's also those other things as well. I love the saying, the dubious luxury is for them. That's not going to kill them if they're mad at everybody. It's not going to kill them. It's going to kill me. And I like what somebody once told me, too, with that. It's like, you know, if you want to take poison and watch, you know, a resentment is very simply me taking poison and hoping somebody else dies. I mean, it's a useless exercise, and I pray right away when I feel it, and I go try to work it out, and if I can't, I can't, but at least I made an effort, and at least my program has given me that to do. At least I can go up to say, look, I was wrong, what can we do to change this, you know, what I did was wrong, I want to have a better relationship in the future, what can we do to make that better? And maybe if you stop talking to me like this and I stop talking to you like that, maybe we can get along better. Now, that seems to be grown-up stuff, you know, or whatever, but nobody does it. The earthlings, they walk around, bastards, you know. F him and screw that and do this and do that. But, you know, unfortunately, for Jay, I can't do that. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to walk around like that. You know, it's terrible to walk around in a job on eggshells. You know, I mean, how many are doing it? I mean, this program runs deep. Let's be real about it. It's not about the alcohol only. It's about living a nice life, a peaceful life. So, and I think that the 12 steps in the big book, along with other things that you'll do for your spirit, along with going to meetings, along with sponsoring people, along with the whole gamut, makes for a beautiful recovery. And I just wanted to emphasize that whoever wants to listen, that don't get, you know, sometimes you get some false information. Let me retract that. What I believe to be false information, and that is that if you live in a certain neighborhood, you have to move. If you work at a certain job, you can never go back to that job again. You have to change everything and everybody that you know. You can't walk by a bar. Really? Okay, is there anywhere in the country there's no bars? I'll move there. Because one of the biggest sayings and one of the biggest things in the book is you cannot shield an alcoholic from temptation. So if you can't watch sideways, you got a problem. For me. If you have to turn away from a television set because there's beer on it, that's not the program. That's not freedom. For me. If all of a sudden you get very queasy, you know what I mean, and you may have to take a quick trip to the bathroom. That is not, that doesn't happen to me anymore from watching TV. Do you get my drift? This is not about, you know, having to worry about how much money. I mean, can you imagine that? I heard this just recently. I carry $40 a day. That's it. $40. So I said to him, I raised my hand, and in my own way I said, don't bet the horses, because if you do, and you hit, you'll have more than $40. What are you going to do, give it back? In my own joking way. And they said, no, I would, you know, take it and just keep the 40. Put the you know, there's too much thought in the whole thing. I have a limit on my ATM card, or, you know, I can't go here or I can't go there. And I'm just here to say that most of us that have been through this work understand in our deepest and deepest heart and soul that's trouble. I have to say that from the bottom of my heart. If you're living your life with limitations like that in sobriety, and your sobriety is based on triggers and based on people placing things. Now, in early recovery, before you get through this work, you may have to use some of those tools. It may be very important to use that stuff. But for long-term recovery, my experience is that's not going to be successful. And if it is successful, it's not the happy recovery that I have. Ha ha ha. Because you're going to work in an industry, you're going to go places where people are going to invite you out. You know, it does say whoopee parties in the book. I mean, that's one of my favorite. When I open up with a sponsee a lot of times and we get into the work a little bit, I go to that and I read it to them. What that says, those promises. And it says, and I quote, we may be able to do things that are normally most alcoholics are told they would not be able to do. Maybe not quote unquote, but it's very close. And that is what? Watch TV shows. Attend this. Go to this party. Go to that place. Go to this. It says, with a warning, you go and have a good time as long as you're spiritually fit. So don't get it twisted and don't sit around going to meetings all the time and then say, that guy said I can go over here, and then you go there unspiritually fit and find stuff under the bar. See, that's two different animals. The peace and the joy and the neutrality that I'm telling you can have and promising you that you will have if you go through the work with your heart and you do it the way your sponsor is going to show you, you know, guide you through, you will achieve the same promises as everybody else in here. And that is, I'm going to the Met game I'm going to the Yankee game on Saturday. You know, I'm going to say what I feel in my heart, you know. I guess, you know, some sponsors would tell me, Yankee game, just be there. Are you going to go there? You're in trouble, Warren, you know. What? What? Don't go to the Yankee game? Well, you know what? Do they have a non-alcoholic section? I'll sit over there. I mean, last year I went to two games. I sat in the bleachers. You know, things are happening in the bleachers. And I was very happy to go. And I went, and of course I ate, which I shouldn't have. And I'm just blessed with the peace that I don't care if I walk into the bathroom. I'm not afraid. I don't walk in fear of walking in the bathroom and all of a sudden, you know, people have a runny nose. You catch a cold in the stadium. And that's, you know, in a nutshell, here's the thing in a nutshell. You know, I stand up here from, you know, a true miracle of God. And I stand up here passionate. People saw me at my worst. There's people in this room that saw me. And they know, you know, I didn't come in here. I'm not talking from, you know, a place of non-experience. Because I thought I was going to die. I had one foot in the grave. As many other people probably have in here. And to be returned from that to this, through the 12-step program of recovery, and through helping others, and through the whole experience, how could you not be passionate about it? And to be given some gifts that you, and the gift that I'm talking about is freedom. You know, to me, there's two kinds of recovery. There's hanging on every day, wishing by hope that you don't use today, that you don't drink today, being miserable, standing up in a meeting and telling your tears of woe, and hoping that that's going to keep you sober. I was on the LIE today, you know. This guy cut me off, and, you know, I'm going to tell you, I almost went to the bar after that. I mean, do you think for your one second in your mind that life is going to stop because you decided to get sober? Life is not going to stop. People are going to still be people. It's you that have to change, not them. And that change can only be brought about, in my experience, by an experience with the program and a connection with something much greater than yourself. So there's your option for me. You know, what I like to say is, did you settle for beat alcohol? Don't settle for beat recovery. It, to me, there's two types of recovery, and that is suffering recovery or spiritual peaceful recovery with no limits and no ties and no limitations and just a beautiful connection with your higher power. So if you haven't had a chance to find God, may you find him now. My name is Jay. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for letting me share.